Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you. Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49%. Based on credit worthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
Look out, it's only films to be buried with. Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a burger bun, and I love films. As Dr. Seuss once said, I like nonsense. It wakes up the brain. I also like High Life, the Claire Denise film, even though it has an arguably bleak view of human existence. Bit of fun there from Dr. Seuss. Every week I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died. Then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Jameela Jamil, Ricky Gervais and Mark Kermode. But this week, my special guest is the comedian, writer and actor Tom Basden. I'm in LA at the moment, but you can keep up to date with all my live shows and stand-up gigs by following me on Twitter at Brett Goldstein and on Instagram at Mr. Brett Goldstein. And if you do enjoy the podcast and want to support it and get more content, please come and join me over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you'll get extra guest questions for most of the episodes. You might get videos, you might get guest list tickets, recommendations, all sorts of stuff. And best of all, if you do become a Patreon member, not only do you get all of that good stuff, you don't have to hear this bit about becoming a Patreon member. You get the whole episode completely unencumbered by ads and stuff like this. So give it a look over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So, here we go. Tom Basden is an award-winning comic, actor and writer. You'd know him from Afterlife and from David Brent Life on the Road, from his work with Tim Key and The Cowards, and from his own co-created show, Plebs. And he's absolutely brilliant. We recorded this last year in his kitchen whilst his new baby slept upstairs. Oh, we had a lovely time. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed recording it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 44 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. I am joined today by actor, writer, musician, musical comedian, award winner.
Keep going.
Pop star.
Yeah.
Collaborator, writer of printed word too.
Okay. It is a separate genre, writer of printed word.
Hero to a certain demographic. Please welcome, it is Tom Basden.
What do you mean, please welcome? You welcome me.
Well, I am actually in your house. Thank you for having me around.
Not at all.
Thank you for welcoming me around.
That's all right.
Here we are in your house. We don't have to give away the whole address.
Give away some of it, if you like.
London.
Number 42, London.
Oh,
you work it out.
Narrows it down. Does
it
narrow
does.
It down.
It does.
Most roads in London go up to 30, as we know.
Yeah, and they're not long streets in London, lot of time.
So, Tom Basden, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, just into our second G&T. Oh, I'm on my second, you're in your first.
Yeah.
So I'm probably a bit more open than I would be ordinarily.
Perfect.
Yeah.
You're mid-plebs, I believe, or beginning plebs. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
We're sort of starting work on series 5 of plebs, yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks, man.
And the longest running shows in British history, other than Coronation Street, probably?
I think what we might have picked
Emmerdale?
It.
Coronation.
Yeah.
Emmerdale.
Coronation.
Plebs.
Coronation. News. Plebs.
Oh, yeah. News is still going, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fucking out.
Yeah.
Renewed every year, isn't it?
Yeah.
What about films? Do you like them?
I love them, yeah. Oh,
that's convenient.
I prefer films to TV programmes, actually.
Me too?
Yeah, I do. And
why
is that, you say?
Yeah.
I think it's because that thing with TV shows where people recommend them and you know that means probably like 40 hours of your life.
Yeah.
Do it. And also I feel like now TV shows are made almost expressly so that people will keep watching them rather than in order to tell a really good story as well as possible. So even though they can still be very, very good,
yeah,
what they're also doing is kind of stringing it out.
I don't mind it if it's like a mini series or a limited series, as they're called.
Did you watch the second series of Handmaid's Tale?
I'm afraid I have not.
Well, because me and my wife both really like the first series. And the second series is basically an exercise in just sort of nothing happening.
Oh, really?
And just getting to the end, and it's sort of resetting and just keeping you there, just tickling your balls so that you're ready for series three. And, I think it's difficult. What I like about a film is, 2 hours, 3 hours max. So you've done it, you've watched it. You've watched that film.
You did it.
That everyone's talking about. It's done.
It's an achievement, isn't it?
Yeah.
I gave up on 24. Mid-series two.
Right.
Or three, when I realised, oh, you are literally making this up as you go along. Like, none of this, plot-wise, if you look back over hour seven, none of this makes sense. You had no idea where this was going.
Yeah.
And every week you go, oh, he'll be the bad guy this week. And you're like, he can't be because he just did this. And they go, oh, yeah, don't worry. No one's noticing. Here's an advert.
Yeah.
But that's why I liked Breaking Bad, because you did think, oh, you seem to have plotted this.
Yeah, you see, I gave up on Breaking Bad.
Oh, really?
We're talking about TV shows on the films, aren't we? But we gave up on Breaking Bad midway through series two.
Mm.
And just that thing of there was a kind of conflict between him and his wife that was on the horizon.
Yeah.
Was she or wasn't she going to find out? And I just found it unbearable the amount of time they made me wait for that conflict. I was like, fuck you, I'm not doing it. It's disrespectful to me as a viewer.
Yeah, there's another 3 years of that.
I'm sure.
Anyway, we're not supposed to talk about TV. We're talking about film. Have you? You're in a few films. You made films.
I'm in David Brent Life on the Road, and I'm in a film called, oh Jesus Christ, what's it called? Hello Carter.
What's Hello Carter?
That's directed by a guy called Anthony Wilcox, starring Charlie Cox, and I'm in that briefly.
It's a gangster film.
No, you're thinking of...
Get Carter. Get Carter. I thought it was Son of Carter.
It's a bit like After Hours, the Scorsese film, if you know that one.
It's a big shout.
Or U-Turn, the Oliver Stone film. It's like a kind of guy trapped in a city sort of thingy. Anyway.
What are you in it?
I'm a sort of office douche. And then I'm in a film called The Dark Relic, which is made for the Sci-Fi Channel, which should be brilliant because it's so awful.
Right.
And my character is called Sir Robert, and at one point the character's name changes in the script to Sir Robert Demon because he becomes a demon and I grow tentacles and I have to like fight.
Is it on Netflix?
I don't know. It might be. It's definitely like online. It's one of those weird films where it's just like, if you just type it into like Google Videos, it'll be like they'll just find the film on a website. It's really shit.
Did you know it was shit when you like were making it?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Everyone.
Did you know before?
Yeah. Okay. It was one of those things where I was probably about 26, and I got an audition for this film, and at the time I was still sort of doing auditions for ads and things, so I was like, fuck, this is exciting. And then I got it, and then I sort of read the whole script and realised it was terrible, but still thought I will do this.
Yeah.
You know, it was sort of 4 weeks in Bulgaria or something.
Wow.
So it was a lot of fun.
And growing, how did they grow the tentacles out of you?
That was all done on computer, so I wasn't required.
What, so you had to like bone tentacles. Go and pretend?
Oh, not just that. I had to mime a sword fight with my tentacles.
No.
So, and I had like the stunt coordinator in Bulgarian saying to me things like, their tentacles are getting chopped off now. And then I'd have to go, because obviously I'm doing is just shimmying with my shoulders.
You did a shimmy sword.
And then the boffins will create a tentacle sword fight.
That's really embarrassing. Did you really fully commit?
Sure.
No, but as in I would find that. I admire that.
Right.
Because I'd find that.
Doesn't sound like you admire it. The way you
I'll tell you this. I've never said this in a podcast. One of the worst auditions of my entire life was to play Five in Kick-Ass 2.
Oh, right.
And the scene was like attempted mugging, and then we get sliced up by Hit Girl. So all I got was the scene like, you know, give us your money. And then like she pulls that sword, cuts off my arms and legs, right? That was the scene, something like that. Went into this audition. It was just like a casting assistant and someone with a camera. And she was like, so we'll give it a go. And I did it. And then she went, are you going to do the action? And I said, I'm sorry, what do you mean? She said, you know, because your arms get chopped off and you're in a fight. And I was like, yeah, but I thought, well, I mean, obviously we'd do that on set, wouldn't we? She said, well, no, we sort of need to see it. And I was so embarrassed. I was like, sorry, do you want me to mime having a fight and then get my arms chopped off? And she went, yeah. And I went, but do you mean like put my arms behind my back? And she went, yeah, yeah, that sort of thing. And then maybe like go down on one knee. I kept saying, do you mean it? And she said, yeah, because we need it for the thing. And I did it once, like, really bad, like, really like, oh, my arm's come off because I was so embarrassed. And I thought, and I said, I said, don't worry, like, let's end it here. And she went, no, let's get it right. And I was like, no, let me go. And she was like, let's go again. I was in there for an hour. I didn't even get it.
Oh, my God.
But also, what? That's not how it's going to be. But then it turns out that's how it was.
Well, yeah, probably because, you know, with these things, I guess, unless you're in a sort of big budget movie, it might well be that you've got like 20 minutes to do that.
Mm.
And someone's going, and now your arms are off and you're having to really commit to not having any arms.
Some people are more committed and I respect it. I really do because I think it's so embarrassing.
Look at Nicolas Cage. I mean, look at the commitment.
Full commitment.
Yeah.
He's all in.
Damn right.
Yeah.
Amen.
I forgot to tell you. And I should have told you when I got here. It's bad that I've left it so late, actually. We've had a meal. It's quite bad news, you know. I'm sorry to break it to you. You're married as well. And you've got... Look, you've died. You died.
Oh, right. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. How did you die?
Am I allowed to have... disappeared in mysterious circumstances, people not sure if I'm dead.
Go on.
Like a Harold Bishop, the Neighbours situation where...
And then you turn up.
Yeah, well, I was on a boat or you know, I was windsurfing and people are like, oh, he's probably dead.
Okay, well...
Because I just would feel more comfortable with that than...
I suppose you can have that, but at some point you are going to... I'd hate to... But, I mean, this is worse than the news I just told you. At some point... You probably are going to. Even in hiding.
You don't know that.
This is the thing, like Elvis.
Yeah.
Let's say Elvis is still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Probably hasn't got long. Do you know what I mean? Like at some point.
Yeah.
So you've been in hiding. Let's go. Well done. You've been in hiding for 50 years.
Yeah.
60 years.
Okay.
Now what happens?
And I'm not allowed
and
to
And there's
just
no,
be...
science hasn't quite caught up.
Right. Can I be pickled?
Like pickled Walt Disney. Pickled dead.
Like, not pickled to death. Like Disney.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's the deal with him? Is his brain... His
head is frozen, supposedly.
Yeah. Or maybe my head was frozen to death then. Okay. Maybe I was...
So you've been frozen.
Yeah, but maybe it went wrong. And I died anyway.
Where were you hiding for 60 years away from your wife? And froze yourself to death by accident.
Yeah.
That's a good sad
Why not? Why not?
Okay, well, that happened. Is death something you worry about then? It's clear.
Yeah. Well, of course, like...
Some people don't.
I read a thing recently where it said that Stacey Solomon...
Mm-hmm.
You know Stacey Solomon?
Of course I do. I'm a celebrity, get me out of here.
Yeah, and like Factor before that, I think, is terrified of death. Is terrified of like her own death, not just death in general. And I think my reaction to something like that is like, well, duh, like, of course. Isn't that the main thing to be scared of?
Your reaction to Stacey Solomon is...
Well, being afraid of death, like that being a news story.
I think some people don't obsess about it. Do you obsess about it? Like, is it a daily thought?
No, but I definitely suppress it as a thought.
Right.
I don't want to think about it because it'll get me down.
So you don't think about it until
I
now?
I try not to.
Okay. Well, here we are.
Yeah.
Can I ask something? And you can cut this if not.
Yeah.
Are you in the public area? Do you have a... I would like to ask you something that does involve your baby.
Yeah.
Is that uncomfortable? Would you rather I didn't
say
that?
No, it's fine.
Okay. So you recently had a baby.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Lovely baby. Does having a baby change the way you feel about death? Does it increase it, you know what I mean? Or
I don't think it's made me less self-involved, if that's what you're getting at.
No, I wonder, I spoke to someone about this. I think it was my brother-in-law, maybe, who said, some people say, it makes it worse because you're so desperate, you don't want to die because you want to be there for your child.
Right.
But someone, I think it was my brother-in-law, it was almost like a circle of life. He said, I understand now I have a child. That I will die and that he will replace me. You know what I mean? It sort of actually gave him some kind of peace with it, but you don't.
I don't know, man. I just feel like it's... things like that, I think about my son replacing me in that respect, and I sort of think that's fine as long as I can just sort of watch that from a distance.
From your hiding place.
Right, yeah. It's like thinking about your own funeral. Where you're like, I'm absolutely fine with that as long as I can actually see...
As long as I'm there,
yeah.
When you went missing in mysterious circumstances, did we have a funeral? Did we all decide you were dead?
I think you had to. I think decency dictated that you had to. After, let's call it a couple of months.
Did your wife remarry?
No.
Wow. You just watched her from afar, like fucking Ethan Hunt in Mission Impossible 12.
I think I moved on.
Did you?
I met a native on the island that I went to.
You got 12 more kids.
Yeah.
They were just a trial run.
Yeah, and then went missing again. Then to another island.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. Worked my way down the archipelago chain.
Wow.
Yeah.
So a lot of kids out there were missing dads that were all you.
Yeah. In French Polynesia.
Right, okay. So do you think there's an afterlife?
No.
No.
No. If I did, then I wouldn't worry about death.
Well, you would if the afterlife you thought was the burning hell. Then you'd be really worried about death.
I think I'd be all right with burning hell.
Would you?
Well, I mean... I'd rather be in burning hell than nothing. I feel like you can game it. You can sort of, if you've just got to, chase a demon around, more likely the other way around, I think I'd just get into that routine of, oh, shit, it's 6 a.m, I've got to get up and be chased by this demon. Because, that is like...
That's life.
That is life, though, isn't it? Fuck, the demon's back. So it doesn't matter. In as much as in heaven, if you get up and, someone's sort of giving you ring donuts and a massage, you're like, oh, it's 7 a.m, it's ring donuts and a massage. It's just different types of life.
Do you think this is hell? Not this podcast, I mean.
That we are in hell?
Yeah. Get up, chased by a demon. Get through it.
Well,
if you're lucky, have a ring donut every now and then.
I think most experiences that make you that aren't out of the ordinary that make you kind of go, oh God, like a flight being cancelled, or an experience where you go, oh okay, cool, like winning a tenner on a scratch card. Mm. It's like that's how I view heaven and hell, really, that they're just sort of
heaven is a tenner on a scratch card,
well,
and hell is a missed flight. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I've just not really had enough. In things of emotional heft happen to me.
You had a baby. Would you equate that to having a £10 on a scratch card when he was born?
But you've got a long time to prepare.
I was in the carriage. Do you remember when I was at that garage and I did that scratch card?
But the thing is, I don't know, there's just a very big difference between these sort of types of experience in that... that's my neighbour who plays the saxophone.
Amazing.
Which might leak through onto the other mics.
If you're picking this up, the neighbour's playing a saxophone.
Yeah, that's what happens around these parts. In number 40.
Number 42 in London.
Yeah. Well, that's there next door. What was I talking about?
Whether...
Having a baby.
Yeah. Is it like having a scratch card win £10?
Well, obviously not. Obviously, it's like a much more sort of meaningful, profound thing. And there are sort of moments of kind of very real... happiness and sadness that kind of, but I think the way I experience them is that it's a kind of emotion that doesn't have a lot to do with my brain. It kind of, it's a bit like being tired or a bit like...
You mean like, as in, when you're tired and you sort of operate without necessarily analysing it, you just...
No, I think, sorry, what I mean is that when it sort of just hits you in that, when it just kind of hits you without you thinking about it, I don't really believe, or I haven't really had any experience of, like, emotional highs or lows based on my own thinking.
Right.
Like, my processing it and going, oh, wow, what a brilliant thing.
Yeah.
Or, like, what an amazing view. Or, like, oh, no, what a terrible thing. I've never had that. I'm fairly stable in that respect. But I'll sometimes get emotions sort of will take me over briefly in a way that has nothing, feels like it's not much to do with my conscious brain.
What? And so when that happens, does your conscious brain go, bring it back to sort of steady?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, good news.
Go on.
There is a heaven, and it's not just like winning a tenner. It's more than that. It's a place where it's at least 100 quid on every scratch card.
Right, wow.
And ring donut, massage, all that stuff. But also...
I'm getting stressed at 100. That's too many.
Too many.
I don't want to have to think about what to do with that.
What am I going to do with this 100 quid every time?
Yeah.
Also, no sort of suspense, is there?
You're no, scratching it. Much.
Fucking here we go, 100 quid.
Yeah.
You get used to that money quick enough, and then
you need more.
Yeah. Look at celebrity. I always think, you know...
Celebrities aren't happy.
Brattonson. Still making money. You got enough money. Obviously not enough. It's like getting used to a scratch card for 100 quid.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. Richard Branson, I mean, this is obviously a slightly glib point when there are people who are sort of in genuine pain, but Richard Branson probably doesn't feel any different to how he did when he didn't have any money.
No, I don't
Not
think
really.
So.
He's, you know, he's, I guess he's got nicer shoes.
Probably stresses him out.
Probably does.
Why do you think he's always popping in a hot air balloon?
He don't need shoes in them.
Good, get away from it all. Just
get away. Get in the fucking really balloon.
Really stressed, guys, about getting the balloon again.
Yeah.
In this heaven, they are obsessed with films. So that's good for someone like me.
That's good news, yeah.
Is that good for you?
Yeah. Well, better that than, I don't know, something I don't like.
Rugby or something.
Well, it's aubergines, I'm gonna say. Oh, rugby, sure, yeah. That'd be shit if they're obsessed
awful.
With rugby.
Imagine going to rugby heaven. Yeah, I'd like double end it. I'd be like, well, I don't mean it like that. I'd be like, how do I get out of rugby heaven?
Yeah, bad premise for Adam Sandler films.
Stuck in rugby heaven.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking hell, it's a genuine nightmare. It's giving me the chills.
Yeah, I bet it is.
But what they do like in this heaven, film heaven, they like, all they want to do is talk about your life through film.
Yeah.
First thing they ask is, what's the first film you remember seeing? Very first film. Do you remember it?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I don't know if I do, to be fair. I think...
Go on.
I've got an older brother, and so a lot of the early films I watched, ones that he wanted to see.
How much older?
3.5 years.
Is it two of you?
Yeah.
Okay.
So when he's like, you know, 5 or 6 or 7, that's when he's starting watching films, I guess. And so I'm getting in on it.
You're
like
just following
fairly
him.
Young. Yeah. And the film I remember going to the video shop and getting almost every time, to the extent where you go, why didn't we buy this film? It's so stupid. We were renting it like every week for about a year. Maybe you couldn't buy it. Was called The Toy.
With Richard Pryor. Yeah. Jackie Gleason.
Yeah.
Holy shit, first person to bring that up. I remember The Toy.
Right.
Great video cover where he's a puppet.
Yeah, that's it.
A puppet on a string and Richard Pryor is the toy.
Yeah, exactly.
Rich kid by a toy.
Rich kid. I mean, so this is it. I genuinely haven't seen it for like 30 years, so I don't really remember it. But rich kid goes to the department store, is told he can have anything in it, and picks Richard Pryor.
It's a horrendous concept.
Well,
when you
or
think
is
about it,
it a brilliantly satirical take on race relations in the US?
Richard Pryor is literally his toy.
He's a toy. Yeah, he becomes the kid's toy.
Wow, I'd forgotten about this film.
Yeah, and it's brilliantly funny because of Richard Pryor.
Yeah,
or at least it was when I was that old. I don't know now if it's that funny.
Wow.
Yeah, we used to watch it every week, honestly. Go down Club Video, get that film.
Toy.
Yeah.
Fucking great. You blew my mind there. I'd forgotten that existed.
Yeah.
Never talked about that. You'd think that would pop up in the same way like Soul Man exists.
Well, you'd think, you'd certainly think it would come up as an example of a kind of, you know, like something that's racially very ambiguous and quite hard to process.
Yeah.
Being presented in a very straightforward way in the 80s,
like, and it's then, like a family film, isn't it? It's a family comedy. Yeah.
It's a family comedy in which the sort of implicit racial stereotypes are not being in any way acknowledged or sort of processed.
And you don't remember it that well, but you saw it.
Not very well. I mean, I'm sure it's not that funny, but we used to howl with laughter. I remember that.
Do you remember a feeling of like, oh, this is for me, films? Or did you just think, I want Richard Pryor as a toy?
It's hard to say. I honestly don't think I've kind of felt like there was a difference between films and TV shows, except I remember growing up feeling like films were American.
Right.
And TV shows were British.
That's so interesting.
So films would be things with American people in and be a bit longer. And TV shows would be things with British people and be a bit shorter.
Where was this? Where were you growing up?
South London.
Where?
Sutton.
Sutton?
Yeah.
Shut up.
Where you grew up?
Sutton.
No, you didn't.
Shut up.
Did you?
We never had this conversation.
No. Did you?
Yeah.
Where in Sutton?
That's so weird. We'll talk about this later.
Well, thank you. We'll talk about it now.
42, Sutton. That's fascinating. I didn't know that.
Mm. Well, between Sutton and Cheam, Mulgrave Road.
That's where Mulgrave Road?
Yeah.
Fuck off.
That's where I grew up.
Know all about it.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is from Sutton?
Lolly Adefope.
Lolly Adefope.
I did know that. And John Poynting.
And Mark Restitution.
Don't know who that is.
Well, funny guy.
Tom Davis.
Shut up.
I think he's from Sutton, yeah.
We all live around there.
Yeah.
Why weren't we hanging out? What ridiculous time. Right, yeah, so yeah. My question was going to be, do you remember first going to the cinema? Because this was on video.
Yeah, so... all right, I think okay. Early cinema experiences would have included Inner Space.
Yeah,
for my birthday, 1988, I think. But I must have been before that. I was 8 then. I must have gone before that. Indiana Jones and the Raiders, maybe.
Yeah,
I think maybe even when was Return of the Jedi?
Yeah, I think that's 83.
83. I would have gone to that at 3, maybe not. Anyway, definitely Inner Space, Back to the Future 2. I remember those are kind of early sort of cinematic experiences.
With your brother, with your parents?
Oh, yeah.
All together?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nice time together? Was it like a thing?
Yeah, I guess so. I think I used to like, shout in the cinema. I'd sort of cheer on the hero.
Oh, no, I'd have hated you.
Yeah. You would have done, I think. Yeah.
I mean, he's a fucking prick from Saturn over there.
Not when I was like 15. I thought when I was, you know, when I was like 7 or 8 or whatever, I'd cheer on Mindy or whoever.
Yeah.
Right.
What is the film that scared you the most?
Yeah. So I mean, I get very scared.
Oh.
So I don't watch horror films really at all.
Interesting.
Just never really done it. So the last film that scared me, like properly scared me, was probably Pan's Labyrinth. It's not even that scary, I don't think.
One of my top 10 films.
Is it?
Yeah. It is scary.
It's something about that certain kind of scariness, the sort of supernaturally scary, kind of demonic scary, that I just can't handle at all. I lose my shit. For days afterwards, I just can't handle it. Yes, Pan's Labyrinth, anyway, is the answer to.
So if you are, like, so terrified of films...
Yeah.
What? There must have been...
No, not films. Horror scary films, yeah.
And life? Things in life or just horror?
No, I don't mind things in life. I don't mind, like, I don't mind gory films. I don't mind axe murderers, anything like that.
It's ghostly
stuff. I mind
ghosts
and ghouls.
So what, like, started that? Because there must have been a thing where you're like, I'm not doing that again, I'm not watching that.
So I remember clearly things like a kid show called Tom's Midnight Garden. That scared the hell out of me. I remember a thing called Chiller, or it was a TV show. And there was an episode about a man who didn't believe in ghosts starring Peter Egan. And that scared the absolute bejesus out of me. It's ghost stories, basically. Ghost stories just as a kid. I just remember, like, I very vividly being very young, like, hearing any kind of story that was vaguely supernatural and just having a kind of really, like, a sort of feeling of horror.
And you've not tested that since?
No. I actually get very, very angry that they are allowed to trail horror films.
Really?
Yeah. You think I'm joking, but like my wife will genuinely cover my eyes. I'm in the cinema and a horror film trailer comes on. because I'll kind of want to see if I can take it.
Yeah.
And she's like, don't do it to yourself.
Okay, now, mate. I love it.
Mm. But then, you know, those kind of films like sort of Wolf Creek and that kind of thing, like...
Yeah, that's... See, with it,
not, no problem with that.
I do not like people being hurt.
Yeah, I don't care.
But people being haunted, I'm into it.
Are you?
Well, it scares me. It really scares me. But
you like the scare?
But what I don't like watching people being cut up and hurt.
Yeah, fair enough. You see, I guess, in a way, I like the scare because it really, really works. But I feel like it makes me just worry so much about reality and worry about... You know, just things like, you know, going up a flight of stairs. I just it just freaks me out. But just being indoors on my own, it just freaks me out. So I just don't watch them.
I think that's totally fair.
Yeah.
My mum's a lot like that.
Yeah.
My mum's like, why would I put myself through it?
Fair question.
And I'm like, why don't you marry Tom, mum? Not the first time I've said that.
No. What's her answer?
She's like, well, currently I am married.
To?
Your dad. But
what's his name?
Let's see how it goes.
What's his dad's name?
Howard.
Is it Howard? Didn't see that coming.
What were you expecting, Brian?
I don't know, like a more, just a bit more of a, like, you know, Mike Lee character name.
Mm.
Just a sort of Dennis or a Gordon or a Dean or something.
It's funny, he doesn't look like a, he looks like a Dennis.
Right.
What's the film that made you cry the most?
Oh, yeah. Any film on a plane makes me cry, no matter what it is.
Yeah.
But I think...
50 Shades of Grey.
No, well, I've never seen that, actually.
It's good.
Is it?
I watched it on a plane.
And?
I've talked about this before. I love the ending. Genuinely, the ending of it, I was like, that's a massive, genuinely good ending.
That's a great shade of grey I didn't see coming.
Yeah. All 51 right. Shades, that's the twist.
But in all seriousness, I would say probably... the film Blue Valentine really broke me. That really made me cry a lot.
I like that film a lot.
I love that film. I love that director, actually. And also his film The Light Between Oceans made me fucking cry my eyes out. You seen that?
He likes to make a cry film,
doesn't he? He's just brilliant. He's so good.
Place Beyond the Pines. Great film. All
fantastic film. I mean, it didn't make me cry so much, but it's a fantastic film.
Yeah.
He's just great. I sort of think he's probably the best filmmaker now.
I have a thing about atmosphere in films where it feels sort of gritty, authentic, he does that very much.
Mm-hmm.
Blue Valentine's excellent. But someone once said to me, someone was very upset by Blue Valentine, they said, what is the point of that film? And I was like, oh, I can't answer that. I don't know what the point, as in, that's a big, like, what do you mean, what's the point? It's just, is.
But that's like asking what the point of Dr. Zhivago is. It's like, just because they're not trying to steal $30 million from a vault doesn't mean it doesn't have a point.
Yeah. So you don't know what the point is, though.
Well, the point is it's a human story about sort of, you know, people and relationships.
It's really good.
It makes you a better person watching it.
It's sort of a reveal quite near the end, isn't it? Because you're kind of, if it's balanced, it's this love affair story. And you're kind of, I think, more weighted towards him. He's the nicer.
He's sort of suffered more, really.
And then in the end, when you realise, oh, no, he's not. He's a drunk.
Yeah, but then I guess they're both slightly to blame for each other's situation, aren't they? And they're both sort of trapped. I mean, I just thought it was so great.
So that one, that's the one that made you cry the most?
I think it probably did. I mean, there's a film called 45 Years made a couple of years ago that was fantastic. 45
Years is... I fucking love it.
I mean, that's brilliant. I really cried in that.
I love it.
That was great.
I love it so much.
Yeah.
Please watch 45 Years if you've never seen it.
Yeah, it's really good.
God, it's good.
There's a Chinese film as well called The Road Home.
Yeah.
That really made me cry. And maybe in a happy way, in that it's all about...
You lived in China for a year, didn't you?
Yeah. But this is about a guy basically telling the story of... It starts with his dad has died and everyone in the village has to carry the coffin as a sign of respect.
Right.
But all the way through the village, and the son is kind of leading it. And it talks about how the dad met his mum, and the dad basically moved to the village, this remote village, to become a teacher. He was sort of positioned there. And then it's just a really straightforward love story between the dad and this girl who lives locally, who just sort of decides that she loves him. And it is, I mean, I was just all over the fucking place in that. But I don't massively like romantic films, like sort of good-natured romantic films particularly, like those kind of... you know, Sleepers in Seattle type films. I don't really like them very much.
Why not?
I guess it just feels a bit fake.
Okay.
Everyone's so kind of witty in them. But this, yeah, The Road Home, or I think it's called My Father and Mother in Chinese, is really not like that. It's really just sort of...
Did you see it in China? It's very powerful. Where did you see it?
Yeah.
On a date with your wife?
No, not on the cinema. It was just a sort of bootleg DVD, you know.
In Chinese?
With subtitles, I mean.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not at that point with my Chinese.
You were crying like, what is going on?
I'll never be at that point. I'm just crying, realising how badly my Chinese lessons are going.
That sounds good. Road Home. Interesting.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval, variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49%. Based on credit worthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What is a film that you used to love, you loved it, and you've watched it recently and you've gone, oh dear, this does not hold up?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if this is fair, but I would say the film that sprang to mind was Yellow Submarine.
Okay.
And I loved that as a kid.
Yeah. Why do you think...
It's just shit, isn't it? Have you seen it recently?
I've not watched it recently.
It's just stupid. It's like, the songs are good, obviously, because it's the Beatles, but the actual film is just sort of like... It's just nothing.
Really?
I think so.
Okay. Like, stupid in the way that Moonwalker's stupid. Like, as in, it's
I think
film.
Maybe not unlike Moonwalker. It's not a film. It's not a story. And all of the kind of animation stuff is just sort of bullshit, I think. But I used to love it. And all the blue meanies and everything, I used to love all that.
When did you watch it recently? Because they just re-released it.
5 years ago, have they? Right.
It's summer anniversary and they've done like a big 4K restoration. I'll send it to you.
Please do.
For Christmas. With your Christmas card. What is the film that sort of critically, in the main, people don't like this film, but you're like, you guys are idiots. This is the best film ever. What is it?
A film that I think, well, put it this way, I think this is I'm the only person that likes this film, which is Noah.
I like Noah.
Do you? Darren Aronofsky like film. Yeah. With Russell Crowe.
I think it's a fascinating...
Yeah, me too.
Unbelievable... Go on, you tell me. And we'll talk about it.
There's lots of stupid things in it.
Yes.
Like there's
a rock monster.
There's stone rock monsters that are voiced by Ray Winston or something, or like Ray Winston is, I don't know. Ray Winston sort of was trying his best to ruin it, and some of the performances aren't great. Douglas Booth is terrible. But I think it's a really quite a deep film about sort of life and you know what. The price the planet has to pay for human life. I think there's lots of really fascinating things in it.
Yeah.
Also, it was the only film I've ever seen in a 4D cinema. You ever been to one of them?
Oh, you saw Noah in 4D?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, do you know what I mean by that, by the way?
I've never been to one, but it's where the seats move.
Exactly.
And
there's
water.
Spray. And so I went to one, I went to see it in Bulgaria. Because we shoot plebs in Bulgaria.
Yeah.
So I went to see it out there. And it was proper seats moving and being sprayed in the face with water.
But it's really long as well now, so you must have...
Oh, I got soaked, It was like a log flume. But I loved the film.
Yeah.
And I kind of love Crowe as well. I don't know if I'm allowed to have Russell Crowe as my answer to this question, but...
You can have Russell
Crowe. I love Russell Crowe and I love Tom Cruise.
I love Tom Cruise.
Because... Why do you like them?
I love Tom Cruise because, other than The Mummy, which I have talked about, I think... Tom Cruise, for whatever anyone has to say about him as a human, and I don't know him as a human,
I think he's a proper movie star, and he makes good films. Like, every time he's making a film, you go, well, this is going to be a good film. Like, he clearly does his work. He's very committed to cinema.
Yes.
And he, all his films, and he's a fucking movie star. He's like old school. Like, it's sort of a lost art sometimes, I think.
Well, I agree with that.
He makes big, good films.
Yeah.
He's not making Blue Valentine, and that's fine. We've also got Blue Valentine. But like,
yeah, but you see, yeah.
That's why I like him.
I think that's why.
And I also
I like
think he's an underrated actor. You know, Magnolia, he's one of the best performances ever, him in that. Jerry Maguire, he's fucking, he can do it. When he wants to do that, he can do it. Come on, he can do it. What, Magnolia?
Magnolia, but isn't, but Magnolia, it's just a slight party piece, isn't it? Where he's got his ponytail and he's just sort of saying the C word and stuff.
No, the interview
scene. Is it really good? Is it actually really good?
Magnolia.
Well, I know the film's all right. I don't love PTA, to be honest with you.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Sorry.
Listen, Magnolia is magnifique.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I've watched it a lot.
The thing is, I love Cruise, but I don't necessarily think he's a great actor. But okay. I still love him on the basis that he does not do irony. He's just not interested. Yeah. That he means it.
He's like, here we go, we're doing this properly.
Yeah,
we're doing this. Which is what I think about Darren Aronofsky as a filmmaker. He don't do irony. He's like, I'm making this.
Yeah,
and I'm not fucking about.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm going to put a rock monster in him. It's not a joke.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean
it. Yeah.
I mean this rock monster.
Yeah. I've got a lot of time for that. And Crow as well.
Yeah.
You know, he commits to it.
Yeah. He would do an audition for Kick-Ass 2 and pretend his arms would go off without batting an eyelid.
You'd think that his arms had come off.
Yeah.
Or he'd rip them off.
But Noah is... I've talked about Aronofsky before, but Noah, it's a very big budget. I think it was like $200 million or something.
Wow.
And it's mad. And it's not what you think it is. It isn't like... a Christian film, like, it's a really complicated view at this story from the Bible. The end is very dark. Once they, you know, after the flood, Noah, you know, it's a real...
Noah just gets lashed and then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a real darkness to it, and there's a rock monster, and there's all sorts of big issues at play, and it isn't just a... It's just amazing that it exists.
Well, I agree, but I also think, and this is quite a wanky thing to say, I do think he's sort of trying to engage with what is going on in the Old Testament in that story, and not just sort of do that awful Ridley Scott Moses film, you know, that kind of version of it. Was it called Gods of Egypt?
Exodus, Gods and Monsters.
Something like that. But just a kind of, just a sort of what you expect kind of worthy version of the Old Testament story. It's strange.
Really strange.
It's really strange. I loved it.
Great answer. Love to hear about Noah. Doesn't get talked about enough.
Never.
It's my favourite question.
Mm.
What is the film that has the most meaning to you? Not necessarily the film is great, but something happened when you saw it. It was your first date, something like that. So it will always be special to you, this film.
So, I mean, I think my answer to this is probably quite boring in that it was my wife and mine's second date, but we had our first date the night before. We went to Nothing But The Blues Bar on Kingly Street. You know that bar?
Lovely.
And then the next... And so we were...
What, next to the guitar shops?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And then we were out quite late that night. So then we decided to meet up again the following night and go and see Solaris at the BFI. Wow. Not the Clooney one, the Tarkovsky one.
Wow.
And I think we fell asleep after about 15 minutes. Both of us.
That's beautiful.
But it was like a really thing. And I've never seen it.
How long were you asleep? It's a long film.
Yeah, it's long, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we slept for all of it. So that's...
What woke up as the lights came up?
Yeah, yeah.
Someone waking you up?
Yeah.
Guys, everyone's finished.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's lovely.
So I have no idea what it's like.
That's so nice.
But it holds a special place as a movie for us.
But you were both comfortable to fall asleep in each other as well, sort of speaks.
Do you think? I don't know about comfortable, but maybe it was sort of we were unable not to.
Did you kiss that night before?
Yeah. The night before we'd sort of kissed properly for the first time.
And stayed over?
No, not stay over. Are you kidding me? This is like back in 2005.
You're like, we're not going to sleep together
unless
we're at the BFI
watching
a film.
Yeah.
And by sleep together, I mean literally sleep together.
Sleep together, watching some avant-garde science fiction.
That's a really nice story.
Yeah, but it's not, I don't know.
You must never watch it.
You must never
watch it. No, I think, I mean, I watched enough to know. I would like to see it. I keep, Tarkovsky's one of those people that I occasionally, like, go out and buy the, you know, the artificial eye DVDs yeah. of, and then I don't think I've ever watched any of his stuff. Yeah.
I love that story a lot.
Do you?
Yeah. It's very sweet. Good. It sort of makes a lot of sense. It's quite romantic, that.
Is it slightly kind of pretentious? Because I think it was, you know, we were probably like 24. I think both of us like 24 and sort of felt like we should go and watch Solaris at the BFI rather than just like, just something that we would definitely enjoy. Yeah. Like there's probably a kind of like rush
hour.
Happy
Gilmore was on it. Like,
that kind of thing,
anyway.
Yeah. Right.
Do you remember, like, seeing She's Fallen Asleep, I Can Fall Asleep, or you don't really remember?
Honest with you, I think it was, because it was still the second date, it was still a little bit like you don't really look at the other person in the cinema. Okay. Yeah. There's that sense of you might kind of break the spell and the other person goes, oh, no, I don't want to be here with you. You know what I mean?
I wasn't looking at you.
Right, so you just sort of look straight ahead and sort of think, oh, okay, maybe at some point this pressure on my knee will sort of grow from the other end. And then you fall asleep.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's one of my favourite answers, straight out.
Really?
I think that's really, there's something very lovely about that. Because it also, as
I made it up. It's a complete lie.
No. It's good, right? Yeah. As you know, hungover as you may have been or whatever, I don't think you can fall asleep in front of anyone. Like
no.
if you've been...
Oh,
like,
I agree with that. My wife can. She can fall asleep in any film. But even if I start a film late, particularly if I'm in a hotel room and a film starts, I will usually watch it.
Mm.
Just even if I don't want to.
Unless your wife is there and then spark eye.
Yeah. It's unusual that I'll fall asleep in a film.
Good man.
So Solaris was... Yeah, it's an achievement.
A special one.
Yeah.
What is the film... Here we go. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Two of these.
Yeah.
I know you spent a lot of time thinking about this one. What is the film?
Yeah.
Tom Basden.
Mm-hmm.
From Saturn. That you found the sexiest. Look at me.
Yeah.
That you found the sexiest.
Yeah. It's very hard to answer this.
How do you interpret it?
When I was about 14, 15,
mm-hmm.
we had a copy of the Tom Hanks film Bachelor Party.
Okay.
Do you know this film?
It's got some boobs in it.
Has it ever?
80s comedy boobs.
So, but more than just sort of Police Academy, sort of just like boobs at the campfire kind of scene. This was like, there's almost sort of gratuitous stuff in Bachelor Party, I'd say.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So that, I guess that film was meant quite a lot to me at that stage in my life.
Did you take that out of the video shop more than...
No, we had a copy.
Oh, you bought that one?
No. We'd recorded...
You wouldn't buy the toy.
My brother had recorded it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Clever boy.
Yeah. And also, because it's a kind of Tom Hanks kind of goofy comedy, it's sort of like, it's a great Trojan horse for quite sort of, you know, naughty stuff, yeah.
I have talked about this briefly before, but it's a very strange sort of thing in 80s... American comedies, there was often gratuitous nudity in a way that I don't think there is anymore.
Definitely isn't anymore.
Very strict, like in all of them, Airplane, everything just had like...
Airplane, is there?
Yeah, Airplane, there's the shot of like the turbulence and it pans across and there's some breasts shaking. Right.
It's funny, isn't it? I mean, I guess in a way maybe it's all hangover from the 60s and that kind of sense of like, you know, that's just what you do to be a bit edgy.
Mm.
I certainly don't think in most of those 80s comedies it was meant in a kind of sexy way. It was just meant to be a sort of a joke, wasn't it? Like an Airplane or in Police Academy or something.
What was the joke, though?
That there's something just quite outre about these filmmakers, that they're just a bit naughty, that they... I don't know. That it's not...
Well, except now that I think about it, films like Old School, films like that, they'd always do a extended... The DVD would have Old School extended in outrageous edition.
Right.
And that edition would have more nudity in it.
Right.
For no reason. Like, it wasn't the funnier version, but it had more.
Yeah.
So I guess boys were going, well, we're going to have to buy this. That was still going on up to Old School. I think Old School was probably the cutoff point.
I mean, did you ever watch Porky's?
Yeah.
I mean, because that was a film that, again, my brother had recorded, so we'd sort of watch... And I think that kind of sex comedy that I guess was still sort of going on when I was like 18 with stuff like American Pie, which is exactly from the same tradition as Porky's, yes. Really. It's I guess it's finished now. I guess you don't make.
Well, I think internet porn has
killed the
all
market
of that.
For that. Yeah,
yeah, because it did used to be the only place you could see naked breasts, but now it's like, right, we don't need to go to the cinema for that anymore. I do think that that's been a big part of it.
Yes, I guess that's
there's
true.
No point. You don't. No one's going to go.
But then, interestingly, I would say that Porky's actually has a huge amount in common with something like The Inbetweeners, because it's these sort of like, you know, these kind of nebbish guys who are desperate to lose their virginity, and they kind of, you know, they're getting like the headmistress grabbing his dick in the glory hole in the showers and stuff. Do you remember that?
Like,
and it's exactly the kind of shit that would happen to Simon Bird and Joe Thomas in Inbetweeners.
Yeah.
So the tradition is still there.
But Inbetweeners doesn't have nudity, does it?
No, that's right. In terms of,
I think that's what I mean. It's the gratuitous shots of breasts are no longer there.
Which they, I guess arguably they weren't gratuitous back then, because that was the only, you know, means by which young people would see naked bodies. Although you're not really seeing naked men in those films, are you?
No. There's a subcategory to this question.
Yeah.
Troubling boners, worrying wide ones. Any film that you were, and you thought, oh dear, this isn't right?
This isn't right.
You can be interpreted however you like. This all came from Nathaniel Metcalfe. It's watching Pennies from Heaven.
Pennies from Heaven? What?
And seeing some sort of angry husband and wife scene that aroused him, and he thought, I shouldn't really be into this, but I am.
That's interesting. I find the love scene between Simba and Nala in The Lion King really sexy.
You and Jack White?
Does he?
Mm-hmm.
Does he? Well,
loves Nala.
I think there's something inherently, like, but I'd say erotic. I'd say it's like it's just a beautiful scene, and the old Nala's face is so human and so kind of like into it.
She loves it.
Yeah,
it's a real moment of hello.
Yeah,
they stop at the bottom of the hill, and then she goes, huh.
Hello. Yeah, that's right. And there's also a really weird thing.
I had no idea.
In The Lion King, I don't know if you've ever heard this or seen it.
Mm.
There's a point where if you pause it, it spells the word sex. Do you know about this?
Yes, I do.
Have you ever done it?
Have you done it?
Yeah, and it's there.
Really?
So it's like a bit where Simba's just spoken to Mufasa, and then he sort of like collapses onto the floor, and then the dust comes up and blows, and it spells sex. And it's really, it's on the one hand, it's like a joke from the animators, and on the other hand, you go, is there a whole Freudian subtext to The Lion King that I've not been looking for before? Is it all about, you know, a kind of arriving at adulthood through sex? Is that the story? It's like childhood to adulthood through having sex.
Is it?
I don't know. I'm putting that out there.
I like that.
Probably not. It's probably exactly the story that you think it is, but the animators, there are a couple of like quite good dickhead animators who thought it would be funny to write the word sex.
I like that a lot. It probably is both.
It probably is both, yeah.
Great answer.
There's also, I should say, there's also, you know that there's a scene in Top Gun where they have sex?
Yes.
So my granddad was in the RAF, and we used to watch Top Gun with him quite a lot.
Really?
So I only ever saw that scene much later, because he would always fast forward through that scene. And that's, so I became really like, what happens in that scene?
How
I really wanted
to
know what was going on in that scene.
Right.
So it was quite meaningful when I got to see it, because it's like a blue. Do you remember the scene? It's like
Take My Breath Away.
Yeah, and it's like a blue bedroom.
Yeah,
and you get little cruises bottom just going up and down, and curtain billow exactly. And there's something about that scene. It's a blue scene.
You thought that's
but I remember thinking that there was a connection between that and like the word blue for things being like naughty, like being sexy,
because
and thinking like that's
blue coloring.
Yeah, that's like the blue scene in the film.
Ha! Why is it called blue? The blue.
Yeah, scene? I don't know. Can't
Where did blue come from? Kind of started with Top Gun.
Can't have done. I don't know.
Can't have been invented by Top Gun.
The bluey. Well,
invented a lot. Bit of blue for the dad from Top Gun.
Yeah. It's quite useful, isn't it?
Wow.
You just make it all go blue for the naughty bits.
And then the granddad goes, well, fast forward now. Lights have gone blue.
Yeah.
Where is it? Wow. Good question. Please write in. Explain where blue comes from, if not Top Gun. What is the film that you could or have watched the most over and over again?
I would say it's probably Bullets Over Broadway.
Ah, it's a great film.
Yeah, I think I could watch that on
loop. It's a really good one, isn't it?
It's great. It's probably my favourite Woody Allen film, actually.
Mm.
And he's not even in it.
It's a funny one.
It's just so lovely.
Yeah.
I think I might want something else after a while.
Okay.
But it is just such a beautifully made film.
Yeah.
It's such a great story. Just so simple and, it's just great. Brilliant.
It's really great. I saw that with my mum at London Film Festival when I was quite young and loved it.
That's brilliant. Oh, Diane Weiss, and that is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Forget about it. She's so good.
Yeah.
Lovely answer. What is the film? Some people struggle with this question. Depends on your interpretation. Mm-hmm. What's the film you most related to? Might be the character, might be the vibe of the film, might be the story. You go, that film is me. Confessions of a Window Clip.
So there's. I think I've mentioned this film to you when we last met us up. I don't know if you've watched it since, but it's called Dear Diary or Caro Diario, and it's a film by Nanni Moretti.
Okay.
And is like I really identify with kind of what he thinks and says, but also feel like he's a much better version of me. But that there's a sort of tone of voice to that film that I just absolutely adore.
What is it he thinks and says?
So it's a really strange film, really, because he's basically... It's like a sort of documentary made by himself about himself.
Okay.
But it's all fictionalised, and it's in sort of very clear sort of sections, and so there's like a section called Islands, and it's him and his friend going around lots of Italian islands, and then there's a section about him learning he's got cancer, and it doesn't sound very funny, but it's so kind of like delightful. There, nothing is forced about it. Everything is kind of everything feels really, really sort of organic and sort of from him and from his mind. I kind of adore him as a filmmaker, but he's a very specific flavour. Like, I don't think he's for everybody, but I think it's fantastic.
No one has brought him up.
Yeah, I don't think... And like, I love Italian movies, right? I watch a lot of Italian movies because I lived there for a while when I was younger.
Did you ever play in Rats?
Rome. Don't tell me you lived there too.
No, I lived in Florence.
Did you?
No, I didn't. My ex did. I used to visit her a lot. Hated it.
I bet. but I get quite annoyed that people like Sorrentino and Luca Guadagnino thingy are kind of so highly revered as Italian filmmakers, because I don't think they're that good. And there are some who are just so brilliant that no one watches. Yeah.
What were you doing in Rome?
I was working in the Keats and Shelley Museum. It's actually where I met my wife in Rome.
Is it?
Yeah.
You two. It's a real love story, that.
Yeah.
Met in Rome, fell asleep at the BFI.
There you go. That's it, though.
Had a baby.
Yeah.
Like winning a tenner.
Three act picture.
Okay, what is the film, objectively, that's the greatest film of all time? Aliens come, they go, what is cinema? You go, it's this, mate.
Okay, so, when you put it like that, if aliens come and go, what's cinema?
Yeah.
Then I'm showing them The General by Buster Keaton.
Oh, wow.
If they want to know what, if you go, what is this? Why do you bother doing this?
Yeah.
Then I sit them down and go, well, watch that.
Yeah.
And then you'll go, okay, yeah. I get it. That's worthwhile.
We'll be off. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, but like, I feel like that is just everything about that film is just absolutely perfect.
Wow.
But on the other end of the spectrum, the film that I think is like the greatest film of all time in an artistic sense, in the way that it's like hard but brilliant, is a film called E.E. or A One and a Two by a guy called Edward Yang.
Yeah.
Do you know this film?
Yes.
It's like, it's quite hard to... sum up. It's like about a family after... It's about a Taiwanese family after the sort of matriarch, I think, has died.
This is quite a recent film.
No, I'd say it's like...
Go on, tell me it.
90s or something? And by this guy, by a filmmaker called Edward Yang, who is brilliant. He's like... He is just fucking incredible. And he died quite young, sadly. I think E is his best film. It's like 3 hours long, and the thing about it is like every scene is well, actually I don't know if this is true, but it feels like every scene, or my memory of it is every scene is one camera shot,
right?
And in the way of, like, you know Roy Anderson films, like the kind of pigeon sat on a branch
conflicts.
Like those
tableaus.
Right. But they're obviously very, very theatrical, very kind of like heightened. And his stuff is not. It's very sort of naturalistic, but just really, just so great. And it's kind of about loneliness and about love and about kind of death. And it's just fucking great.
Okay.
But like, but it's not the kind of film you go,
Pop this on.
It's not like it's Christmas afternoon. No one's. If it's like, shall we watch The Great Escape or E.E. Yeah. by Edward Yang? Then you go, 9 times out of 10, you're going The Great Escape, but you'd enjoy E.E. more.
Long term,
yeah.
E.E.'s sticking with you over time.
Like, I mean, it's, you can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we pop on E.E. though? No.
Yeah.
Your parents are coming around. Should we pop on E.E.? Don't bother.
I wouldn't.
They're not going to.
No, put on Die Hard.
I don't like being negative. What's the worst film you've ever seen?
Yeah. It depends what you mean, because I guess I get very angry about films that people love that are not very good.
Such as
La La Land or The King's Speech, say.
Okay.
Or Looper. There's some films that are like just shit that people sort of go, "Oh, that's a really good film," you know, and it isn't. But it doesn't mean that it's like the worst film ever. I think the worst film I've ever seen, and this, it stands up because I saw it at the cinema, was Meet Joe Black.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Do you know this film?
I do know it very well. Yeah. I've got an issue with it.
An issue with it?
Yeah. One issue with Meet Joe Black.
What's your issue with it?
My issue with Meet Joe Black, and this is a spoiler for Meet Joe Black, is that the message of Meet Joe Black seems to me, if you look like Brad Pitt, it don't matter, which I suppose is a fair message.
I think it's a very truthful message.
But what happens in Meet Joe Black?
I think Brad Pitt's career is the embodiment of that message.
Meet Joe Black, as far as I understand, a woman meets a man, they fall in love.
Yeah.
The man dies.
Yeah.
Death, a different character, that is Death,
yeah,
decides he wants to experience what life is.
Yeah.
Takes on the recently deceased body of Brad Pitt.
Good choice, Death.
So now Death.
Great choice.
Comes to Earth looking like Brad Pitt. Great choice. Lovely choice. But it's not Brad Pitt, right?
No,
it's not
Death.
That character. It's now Death.
It's Death.
Death hangs out with the girl
that
had fallen in love with Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
They have a nice time together. At the end of the film, Death goes, "I gotta go." Death leaves, but as a gift, I'll give you back Brad Pitt from the beginning.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt comes back. She's now with it. Dip. Doesn't matter who it is.
Doesn't matter which Brad
Pitt. As long
as
it is.
It doesn't matter what personality Brad Pitt has.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's Brad Pitt. I'm in love. Oh, I love him.
Yes.
I've learned about love. What have we learned?
Yeah.
I just hope he still looks like that. He will, don't worry. The end.
I'm sending you Paul Giamatti instead.
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah, different film.
It'll be my personality. Nah, but...
Different film.
Yeah.
Also, Death is like really stupid and is like a child and just eats peanut butter. What's your thoughts on it?
I remember that there's a scene where Brad Pitt as Death speaks jive in a hospital. And that, I mean, I can't hate it because of that in a way. But there's part of me just sort of thinks, like, I would fucking love to know what was going on set. When, like, you've got the guy holding the boom and Brad Pitt is doing jive to an elderly black lady in a hospital. And they're going, this film is... absolute fucking toilet. And also, I'm not sure this is okay. And like, what the fuck is going on?
Well, it doesn't matter because he looks like Brad Pitt. That's the message day in,
day
out.
Yeah. No, sure. I just think it was a magic moment in cinema where like Brad Pitt is expected to carry a film like that. Claire Forlani is allowed to be the female lead in a big, big budget movie and you know, that wasn't a great idea. And, you know, it's just a kind of perfect storm of bad decisions, that film, I think. Like, creatively.
Anthony Hopkins does good acting.
Of course, Anthony Hopkins. Yeah.
Good heart attack scene. I mean, there's good stuff in it. I remember his heart attack scene is sort of scary.
What, and Hoppo's?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Brad Pitt getting hit by the car is very shocking. And it has its bits, but it's just the message I object to. Well, I don't object to it, I agree with it, but I'm not sure it should be.
It's just so shit, though, isn't it? I mean, like, it's... I think it's... I think that gives people the wrong idea, because you might think it's quite entertaining a film, and it isn't.
It's very long.
It's really long. It's not like watching, you know, The Room or something where you kind of go, oh, this is really good fun. It's so shit. This is like, it's just bad. It's just boring.
I've forgotten about Meet Joe Black.
Oh, man.
Meet Joe Black, don't worry, he looks like Brad Pitt.
That's the kind of tagline, isn't it?
What is the film that made you laugh the most? You're a comedian. What's the funniest film?
Yeah, So I think the funniest film is Team America World Police. I think that's the funniest film.
Great answer.
Like there are other films that sort of I kind of appreciate more in terms of storytelling, in terms of character. Like the characters are funnier.
It's fucking funny.
But just like laugh per minute, like number of jokes.
Yeah.
I just how sort of cheeky it is, I think it's probably that, yeah.
Fantastic answer.
Well.
Team America World Police. Straight up is a fucking funny film.
I think there's also different kind of jokes going on in Team America where it's like a lot of formal jokes about puppets and about, I mean, things like, you know, the bit where the guy is like their trainer is talking about the fact that the main guy sucked his dick like before flying out there. It's so ridiculous. Yeah. It's just that they're the only people who would actually. But you'd have that idea and go, we can't do that.
Yeah.
They commit to every single idea like that. They fucking commit to it and they build a film around it.
Yeah. It's great. I'll let you have it.
All right. Thanks, man.
I'll tell you what's not on this list and it's quite on purpose. What's your favourite film?
Okay. Nuts in May.
Great answer.
All right.
Nuts in May, is it?
It's got to be up there. It's got to be one of them. It's so good.
I'm very happy with that answer.
Yeah, it's so good.
You know what's funny? A lot of comedians are going to be really angry because everyone's forgotten to say Nuts in May, and I've had loads of people text me afterwards going, I didn't say Nuts in May.
Oh, really?
You did it.
Yes. And now other people aren't allowed to have it.
No.
That's how it works, isn't it?
Yeah. That's who was Nuts in May.
It's like the draft system.
Yeah. Right. Tom Basden, you've been an excellent guest.
I've enjoyed talking about movies and myself.
I've really enjoyed listening. Now, thank you for having me around. And
can you recommend to me a film that I haven't seen that I should see?
Have you seen Don't Look Now?
I haven't, but it's scary, isn't it? This is a thing. I've been told not to watch
it. Tricky. Yes, it is. I've been told I
can't handle it because apparently there's like Mick Hucknall in a little Mick Hucknall demon.
That's the best. I think that's in my top four greatest films.
Really?
But it's also beautiful and you'd emotionally, fuck, that's a beautiful film.
Yeah, really? Is it really harrowing scary?
And you've just had a baby, that might actually be bad idea. Because it's got loss of a child in it earlier.
Okay.
But it's so good. And you'd like it because it's arty and it's amazing. I don't know if you're strong enough.
I don't think I am, but this is a question I ask myself regularly. Don't think I'm strong enough.
It's a shame because I really think you'd appreciate it, but you might not be strong enough.
I think maybe I'm not.
There's an element of supernatural to it.
Yeah, that might rule me out.
But it's a more suggestion of it. That's bad, isn't it?
I tell you what, I absolutely love Blair Witch Project.
Really?
Yeah.
How come?
I think because it's just, it never really goes there.
Mm.
You never really see it. It's all just suggested.
Okay, then you could see Don't Look Now.
Yeah? Okay.
God, I mean, it's so good. You have to watch it many times. All right, I'd say that, but I don't know if I'm setting you up for never sleeping again.
Look, I haven't seen It Follows, which people keep recommending to me for the same reason.
Don't see Hereditary.
No. I know enough not to.
Okay, what is a film I'd recommend you see that isn't a horror that you haven't seen? I tell you, I bought a post. Have you ever seen Young Adult?
Yeah.
Love that film.
Yeah, that's a good film. I mean, I really like Patton Oswalt as an actor.
Yeah, he's great, isn't
he? Really good. Yeah, that's a good film.
Really good. Now, Tom Basden from The Bastens. Now, when you faked your own death and went into hiding had remarried, had another child, faked your own death, went to hiding, moved around the Polynesian islands.
Yeah. Not proud of it.
Procreating. This went on for 60 years.
Yeah.
It's a huge dynasty you've left.
Yeah.
And then you found your way.
A lot of inbreeding in Polynesia.
To a science lab.
Yeah.
and you tried to freeze yourself because you were so afraid of death.
Yeah.
And you accidentally killed yourself by freezing your head. Now, what happened was, when we finally found your body, and there was a lot of admin, labyrinth of paperwork to get through. But what happened was, your head in the freezer expanded so much.
Ooh.
A huge amount. We put you in a coffin, but we had to, like, cram you, your whole body had expanded in the ice. We cram you in this coffin.
Put my head in a coffin. Has it just expanded like upwards and downwards?
Yeah.
Okay. Like
your
long head.
Well, not long and sort of quite angular, like a
like
coffin.
Like a banana.
We put you in the coffin.
Okay.
But there wasn't any room because we had to cram you in. And there's only room for one DVD after all that. Take to the other side. And on the other side, there's movie night. And one night, it's your movie night. What are you taking with you?
Okay, so I'm taking Dear Diary because no one else in heaven will have seen it.
That's true. No one's brought it.
Yeah. All the other films I mentioned, someone will have brought, I think.
Nanny Moretti.
Yeah.
It's your movie night.
Yeah.
Hi, guys. I'm Tom. It's my movie night. I brought Nanny Moretti.
Nanny Moretti might have brought it.
He's going to say.
I should have brought it.
Hello, Tom.
I brought the Dark Relic.
You're taking Dear Diary.
Yeah.
Leave the Dark Relic because I'd like to see it.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
What of mine?
Yeah.
No.
Watch Plebs. I don't know when this will come out. Plebs might be out by then.
Yeah, by all means, watch that. See if I've got any gigs.
Look up gigs. Watch him on shows and stuff.
Yeah.
He's a really good actor. Just Google it. Google it.
Google me.
Look out for him. If you're walking around London, look out for number 42. You might see him.
You might just. Don't just take the chance and knock, though.
On a series of 42. But if you think you've got the one, I'd say go for it.
In fact, especially not then.
Thank you very much. You've been really fascinating and wonderful. And I hope you have a long and fruitful death.
Thanks.
Good night. So that was episode 44. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein to support the show and check out the archive. And if you do enjoy this show, please subscribe, give it 5 stars and a nice review. For the simple reason, apparently it helps the numbers, means I can keep making it, more people will hear it, you can keep getting into it, we can keep doing this forever and ever and ever until we all die in a massive explosion. Thank you so much to Tom Basden for doing the show and for inviting me round. And thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics, Lisa Lydon for the artwork. Come and join me next week when my very special guest is Game of Thrones writer Dave Hill. So in the meantime, have a lovely week and please be excellent to each other.
Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting 2 young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
Well, how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.